Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Business of Money podcast. I am your host, Nia, and welcome in. Because here at Women's Wealth Institute, when your business is your paycheck, you can't afford to guess. And the Business of Money podcast is one of the media properties of Women's Wealth Institute. So thank you for tuning in. Let's jump right in. This episode is about when one partner is salaried and one is self-employed. So when one partner earns a salary and the other is self-employed, the financial structure of the household must be clear, especially if the business cannot support both itself and the household, because at that point, we need to define something honestly. Is it a business or is it subsidized? And that's not an insult. That's a structural question. A business's goal should move toward sustainability. It should aim to cover its operating expenses, pay taxes, compensate the owner, contribute to household stability. And if it cannot do those things yet, it's simply in development, and development requires a plan. So here's where tension can build. The salary partner provides predictable income. The self-employed partner provides variable income. And if the variable income does not consistently support the household, the salary is carrying both the home and the risk. And this needs to be acknowledged clearly, not from an emotional standpoint, but everything is a financial event in the household, just like everything is a financial event in the business. And if you remove the emotion and only look at how the household and the business is run by two different types of contracts, the home is run by contracts that require attention every single month. The business, especially if you're on a platform, is exactly the same way, except that the contracts are the one the business owns. But the home business is run purely by contracts that others own, and they take precedence. So when someone starts a business and it's not generating revenue or it's not generating cash flow in a consistent manner, because it lacks systems and financial structure, and more importantly, financial leadership and financial intelligence, then it becomes a bit of a challenge because it has to be balanced. So there's nothing wrong with building a business, and there's nothing wrong with an early stage business, but early stage businesses require transparency and certain questions must be answered. So if you have a pen and paper, then you want to write this down. How long is the salary supporting this phase of a business that's not necessarily generating enough revenue to cover the household expenses? And I mean all of them, not some of them, all of them. What are the measurable milestones? At what point must this business cover its own expenses? And when should it begin contributing to the household? And without answers, frustration grows, and with structure, alignment grows. When I drove Uber, and this is from everything I tell you is from personal experience, personal and professional experience. I'm a one-person business. I've always been a one-person business. When I drove Uber full-time, I knew exactly how much my business brought, my household needed to sustain itself, how much I needed to sustain my household. And working for Uber was part-time, and then I did full-time because I'd rather work for myself. So I keep my home expenses low so that I can work any part-time gig and not get stressed. And Uber taught me about daily cash flow. Working part-time teaches me about consistent cash flow, meaning I get a chunk of money at the end of every week or every 2 weeks. Uber taught me about daily cash flow, and it's very intoxicating. When I tell you it's very intoxicating to get money every single day. It can be stressful, but it's intoxicating. But I knew what my expenses were, business and for my home. So I still do to this day, I keep a budget. I kept a budget. And I knew that my business could support my household and my business expenses. My business expenses are only Canva, Hostinger, and Zoom. That's it. I don't need anything else to run my business. For my household, rent, light, gas, electric. So I have a $2,500 minimum, maximum to run my business. No matter what my rent is, no matter what my Georgia Power is, no matter what my maximum is $2,500. Anything over that is extra. And that's it. Medical insurance, health insurance, all everything I need to sustain Nia Patrick and Women's Wealth Institute. So I tell anyone who runs a business, if your business cannot sustain your household, you are in a hustle and you have to figure out how your business can sustain you. That means food, groceries and everything. And if your business can't do that, you need to make adjustments, because if something happens and you have someone who's working, you should be able to pay the bills at any given time. Now, let me take it a little deeper. People like to cohabitate. I did that one. I was married one time, a long time ago, years ago. And I had money coming in. My husband had money coming in. I lived on my own before I met my husband, and I had a child. So I'm used to taking care of me and another person. He was only used to taking care of him, and he was in the military. So the military took care of him. So when he got, but he still knew how to pay bills, and that was important, and he didn't have any kids until we got together, and then we had kids together. Then we got pregnant, we got married. So my husband took very good care of me after he got a job, but before then, we were both going to school at the same time. I had money coming in. He had money coming in. We pooled our resources, and our money came in chunk money because we were living off of student loans. We kept our expenses low, and we were both able to finish both of our degrees. I knew the marriage wasn't going to last. I got divorced, but I knew how much it cost to take care of my family and have always maintained that. So I say that to say this. When I got into my second relationship and lived with someone, because I only lived with two people, when I got into my second relationship, that person moved in with me. I'm used to paying bills. Now, he was used to sharing bills and didn't understand the cost of living with me. And we used to have these conversations about how I need to better manage my money. But you moved into my place. I didn't move into your place. So you're talking to the wrong person. So he's like, you need a job. What for? I'm managing my money. And then you moved in, you're supposed to be paying half the bills. You don't even have to pay all of them. So there was a conversation, oh, you need to get a job. Okay, so I got a job. Then he got mad because now I'm making more money than he did. So, you know, it was a whole big mess, and I tossed him out of my house. To this day, I still live alone, right? So I know what my baseline is. I don't need someone to come in and help me, right? Take care of my business personally. I don't need someone to come and take care of my business professionally because I have financial leadership. Now, my background helps with the MBA in finance, but that's not the point. I understand what it takes to run a household, even with the cost of living increases and inflation. Keep your expenses low. Employing that helps you have more money to set aside. So when you run a business, you should plan on as a goal, whether the goal is within 6 months or even within 12 months, because you have the financial support. But use that to grow your business. Use that support to pay down your personal debt. Use that support to set aside retirement money. Use that support to make sure you have your health care is already paid for. Use that to open an HSA. Use that money to invest in something. Use that money to grow the business. Use that money for savings. But that takes monthly conversations. You want to check out my monthly conversations podcast episode on how to do that. So let's say something clearly. If the business cannot cover its own operating expenses, it is not yet financially viable. That doesn't mean it doesn't lack potential. It just means it lacks structure or traction. And the goal of self-employment is, not should be, is sustainability. Not indefinite subsidy. So this is what a responsible framework looks like. I say it one more time. The salary income supports the household baseline. The business income first supports the business expenses. And once the business covers itself consistently, it begins to pay the owner. And once the owner pay is consistent, it begins contributing to shared goal. That progression matters, and skipping these steps creates pressure. And here's another important point. Self-employment should not depend entirely on a partner's stability long-term, because that shifts the power dynamic in subtle ways, even if it's unspoken. Money equals power. Your money is your power. Your ability to manage money is your superpower, because you can generate income with your skill, your marketing skill, your sales skill, your persuasion skills. Whether you have a website, a phone, or a mobile, you are able to generate money out of thin air. The person working superpower is the same ability to convince someone to put them on payroll and stay on payroll. So you both got different superpowers that can is a complement to each other. And you are a tax write-off for the salaried person, which makes it doubly better as a unit. That's how the power dynamic shifts in subtle ways and is very unspoken. So even if your contribution starts small, the goal is forward movement. So if you're the self-employed partner, ask yourself honestly, is your business structured for growth financially, emotionally, personally? Financially is the best part. But emotionally, are you committed to what you're doing? And then, do you like what you're doing? And if you find that you have problems in your business, and maybe it's generating a nice, decent return, but do you like what you're doing? Are you excited by what you're doing? Are you passionate about what you're doing? Or do you feel like you're trapped? Because if you feel like you're trapped, even though money is power, it's not everything. My business gives me a lot of emotional satisfaction. I get to talk about something I absolutely love, financing, financial management. Money is very personal. People, they don't talk about money. We talk about money here. It's a private space. It's a safe space. This podcast is only on my website. The link will go to YouTube. But you have to go to my website to hear it. So it'll be in my post. And then I'm putting something up to where it's a link, maybe a little intro to check out my podcast, right? And listen to it. It's very personal. And money is just, it's not really spoken about. But within the family, it should be. So when you look at yourself honestly, it teaches you a lot about yourself and about who you are and what you're bringing to the business, how you're going to grow the business, how you're going to operate within the business. And the financial part is the outcome of your decisions and how well you've managed one part of yourself. But if your business, the comfort is funded by someone else's consistency, you really have a hobby and you're able to sustain yourself only because you have a private partner and you're beholden to that partner who really has an equity stake in your business. And if you're okay with that, and they are too, and you have an understanding between each other, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's a hard question you ask yourself, and it's a necessary question you ask yourself, because entrepreneurship requires accountability, not just ambition. And it's that silent partner that can take your whole business down. And let me flip the script on you on that one a little bit. I always have some kind of personal experience, whether something I've observed or something I've gone through myself, so that you understand I'm not just talking bullshit on the side of my cuff and I'm just coming up. Notice I don't give numbers and statistics. Nope. I give you what's basically case stories, case studies to hit my point home. Let's flip the script a bit. Had a friend. She was running her business, her beauty business. She was a stylist. She was a licensed cosmetologist. She was my beautician. And she owned her home. And she went through a divorce, the first one. She had to move her business back home. And I met her probably in a grocery store through a friend or something like that. I don't know. But she became my hairstylist. And I love the business of a beautician, because they're walk-in clients come in and they're generating income off of a skill that they've learned. They found something they're very good at, and women love to get their hair done. So there's always a demand for a stylist, or more so for a stylist than a barber. But they have the best business model because they can literally just go so many different ways with it. And she did really good hair. And we got to become really great friends because I went through her often. And so when she went through a divorce, and she knew I was going to school at the time and had these two kids and was married and was studying for my MBA in financial management, and then when I graduated. So anyway, she got remarried. And during that time of getting remarried, she opened up a shop. And when she opened up this shop, because she was able to save enough to go get her a shop because she was moving it out of her home, she went into this really nice complex where it had there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 doors. She was one of 5 doors. And I was like, this is really cool because you have these other businesses that traffic will see your site, you know, your shop. But if I were you, at some point, I'm buying up all of this whole complex as a long-term goal, and then you rent these out so that these shops support your business and you never have to leave. She was like, that's an interesting idea, and I kind of thought about that. And I was like, yeah, you're on the right track with that. But anyway, this husband of hers, I don't know what he did, but I don't think he worked. And next thing you know, one day I come in and I go to her house and she's nervous. And I'm like, what's the matter? And she's like, my husband is divorcing me. What? And he's taking equity from my house and he's taking equity from my business. What? Now, that's something I knew was possible, but it's not something I actually saw in action. And she's trying to and she has no cash flow. She can't just go to the bank and pay him out. She don't have that kind of money. She had to figure out what equity she had in her home and what equity she had in her business and how she was going to pay him out. And California is a community property state, which means that 50% of whoever's earning the most, it's 50% of someone's pay, income. And she was the breadwinner. Because like I said, I don't think he worked. So he married her for her money. Because they were only married for like 2 years. That was the surprising part. And I was like, damn. Good lesson learned. Don't ever get married. I was already married, but I knew going in, I knew in my marriage, once I got divorced, I'd never get married again. Because I've seen too much to know, especially in California, why celebrities keep getting married in California, drive me bananas. But I knew that I never wanted to commingle my money like that. And even getting my degrees and being married, my husband and I are looking around for a house. And I was like, nope, I don't want a house. One, we had the marriage wasn't going well, and I knew it wasn't going to. But I'm like, I don't want to commingle a house. And there's already too many problems just renting and dealing with your money, because you keep asking me all these questions. And I ran a little business, nothing major. But I knew I wanted to own a business, and I knew I wasn't giving up anything in my business. And even when I got divorced, I just asked for my name. I don't want your retirement. I don't need alimony. You keep all your money, and I get to keep. Now, I had no money. He had more than I did because he worked. I don't need any of that. I'll take care of myself. And today, that's still the best decision I'll ever make, because you never know what people are going to be. But I'm never going to have anybody come back and say, well, you owe me, or I have an interest, or this, that, and a third. I retain 100% ownership of my company. And I think sometimes I think those kind of things come back on you. And I didn't need the support. I had an MBA. So she had to do that. And I was like, that's wild. But that was a lesson learned for me and a lesson learned for her. So she was the partner who had the money, but she didn't have the conversations with him. Or if she did, the conversation is, honey, I guess what? I got myself an office. And he just went, ka-ching. I have more clients. Ka-ching. Right? She moved into her house. Ka-ching. Right? So that's how you flip. That flipping the script is, if you are the person making the money, how you need to make sure you're secure. That's another video, but I wanted to flip the script on that. So let's go back to, you're the employee, self-employed, in your partner or who you're with. We're looking at the salary partner. If you're the salary partner, clarity protects you as well, because you know how that person is allocating their time and their money. So as a salary partner, you deserve to know what's the timeline, what are the targets, what happens if targets aren't met. And it's not about control, it's about shared stability. Self-employment should eventually aim to cover itself, pay the owner, and strengthen the household. And if it doesn't move in that direction, it's a project, it's a hobby. And projects are funded differently than businesses. And there's dignity in building something stable. But there's also responsibility in building something that's stable. And when one partner is salaried and one is self-employed, that alignment must be deliberate. Because when income is shared, the structure must be shared as well. So, you want to move from subsidization to sustainability. You want to start setting a 12-month profitability target for yourself, when to return to employment temporarily if you need to, and how to measure if your business is actually viable. If you need any help with that, you want to book one of my advisory sessions or attend a Cocktails and Conversations, which happens every Monday from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. to make sure that our West Coast community can participate. You can attend a workshop, look on my site and see what's up. But there's many ways to engage with me, paid and free, so that you can make sure that you're moving from subsidization to stability. Because here at Women's Wealth Institute, where I teach financial intelligence to solopreneurs, when your business is your paycheck, you can't afford to guess. All right, that's it for me now. I'm out. I'll catch you on the next one.